Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back for a brand new episode of Collateral Ladies Night Pre-Party. I love the boys. And I'm so, so excited to get to talk about this show and then some with star Claudia Dumit. Hello. Congratulations. You are crushing it in season 3.
Oh, thank God. Hello. I'm so happy to be here. This is great. This is amazing. I can't wait.
I mean it. It's not easy to play a character who is busy showing off one specific thing, but deep down is, you know, kind of manipulative and has different intentions than we are fully aware of just now. So I'm very impressed.
Yeah. It does feel like I'm playing 7 different characters sometimes because Newman is a very manipulative character. She's very duplicitous. So she definitely is a woman of many masks, and she adjusts the mask that she wears based on the interaction she's having. So like whenever I get a script, I'm endlessly excited to see who she's interacting with, because I'm like, oh, who is she today? Who is she in this episode? Who is she in this scene? So it's really entertaining.
I have many questions about that. But first, we have to know about how your journey in this industry began. And every episode of Collider Ladies Night starts here. What is the movie, the show, personal experience, whatever it may be, that first made you say to yourself, I absolutely have to be an actor and nothing else?
Oh, God. I was one of those annoying little kids, though, that like always wanted to act and always like wanted to be on, you know, a stage or a platform, just craving my parents' attention. So I knew that I wanted to perform from a pretty young age. I remember every afternoon I'd come home from school. I think I was about 5 or 6 at the time. I'd put on my mum's go-go boots and one of my dresses and like a bit of her lipstick. And we had these like huge speakers, and I'd bring the speakers out to the balcony and blast ABBA's Mamma Mia and perform it for my mum on the balcony every day. God bless her. The neighbors absolutely hated me. But here I am. So it all worked out.
This all makes so much sense. It began with ABBA and now we're at the boys. I see the connection there.
Full circle.
Not at all. So you have those early dreams to become an actor, and ultimately you decided to study your craft in school. And that's something that I always love digging into, because it's important for some people. Some people would rather just jump right into the industry and get professional experience. So at that point, why was it important for you to study your craft in that formal setting?
Really, it was just kind of circumstance, actually. When I was 17, I graduated high school and I auditioned for all the big acting schools in Australia. And I got rejected from every single one of them. And 17-year-old me was absolutely devastated at the time. And I remember my parents saying, you know, the old thing, they're like, you got to get an education of some kind. You have to get some education. So I went to like one of the universities and I dicked around in an arts degree for a semester and a half. And then I dropped out, didn't tell my parents, and started taking acting classes on the side. And then I remember my mum said to me one day, your schedule's a bit off. And that's when I told her. I was like, I'm acting. I've dropped out of university. I want to be an actor. And she did the best thing a parent could do in that situation. She was, I mean, she had like a moment of a breakdown. And then she was really supportive. And she said to me, okay, if you want to be serious about acting, let's be serious about acting. Talk to every person you know, every person you respect in the industry, like teachers, mentors, everything, and ask their advice. And I did. I knew like 5 or 6 people that I really looked up to at the time. And I had calls with all of them and I asked them, what should I do? And every single one of them told me to leave Australia. They said, you're not going to work here. You're never going to work here. The industry, your face, your look doesn't sell. They said, go somewhere where there's more opportunity. Go to London, go to Los Angeles, go to New York, anywhere you can get your foot in the door. And at the time, my mom had met a woman who was a manager in Los Angeles. And she actually met her a few years prior at a function or something. And I didn't know this, but she'd been sending her what I'd been doing over the years. So if I did a production of like Julius Caesar, she'd email her and she'd say, my daughter's Brutus in Julius Caesar in this local production, which is mortifying. Thank God I didn't know any of that. But she was very much letting this woman know my journey with acting like over the years. And so I set up an appointment with her. When we came to LA and we set up a meeting. And it went really well. And she said, I love your energy. Come back She said, come back with a visa and an accent, and I'd love to represent you. And I was like, great, I'll be back in a month. A year later, I came back with a half-baked accent and like a student visa, because I got into this acting school, this acting conservatory, right on the intersection of Hollywood and Highland. Hilarious.
This was Stella Adler.
Stella Adler, a brilliant school, but like that, but also that was just my first introduction to what Los Angeles was. So I thought Los Angeles was the intersection of Hollywood and Highland when I first got here.
Well, I kind of get it.
which is like, it's just like such an extreme environment to be thrust into, but kind of necessary. And then that was just, and that's how I'd started here. And then that manager, like, kind of cultivated my career, and she was like, I'm gonna send you out on a few things. And so it was really just opportunity. I was told to leave my country if I wanted to get the opportunity that I wanted, and this is just how it worked out. LA was just the place.
I have to backtrack to something you said earlier, in that you were told that your look wouldn't sell.
Yeah.
So were they saying it was a you problem in Australia, or more or less opportunity in Australia? What was that comment?
It was a look thing. And granted, this is like 12 years ago at this point. So, you know, it wasn't really the most diverse landscape, and it's still getting to that, you know, we're still trying to get to that point really of like accurate representation of what people look like out in the world. But yeah, just nobody looks like me on TV at the time, and you know, things are changing now, and that's amazing and so well overdue. But yeah, there were just more opportunities for me to be in things out here, and so that's really what advice anyone could offer me at the time. It was soul crushing. I was 17 at the time, and I was like, no, they don't want me on TV, my dream. But it was the best piece of advice I could have got.
And it sounds like you had someone really special in your corner when you got here with this agent. And I love talking about the actor-agent relationships, because it's so important and we don't talk about it nearly enough. So what is it that you appreciate in that relationship where, you know, even after some of that rejection, it still gives you the confidence that, like, I'm here, and not only am I here, but my dream is realistic here.
I mean, I think you just have to have someone who is essentially that, who's in your corner and like isn't just there for the paycheck or this or that, but like actually is just with you as a friend and a person along the way, and kind of has an idea of, you know, what the trajectory looks like. I think it's just someone who's really invested in you and believes in you, really. And that's, I have to have a relationship with anyone on my team. I can't, operate any other way. So authenticity is the name of the game.
I know it's different for everyone out there, but whenever I think of like actor, agent, manager relationships, I always think that it does have to have that friendship layer, because it's not, I don't know, again, this is just my perception of it, but it's not just a career you do for work. It's because it's your deepest passion ever. And yeah. Who cares about your deepest passion more than someone you can call a true friend?
Yeah. I mean, and they know your hopes and your dreams. They're so deeply connected to your world and your wants and your desires and what you see for yourself. And it has to be a friend. It has to be someone who's like with you till the end. I was gonna say Thelma and Louise, but that's not a great ending, so you know.
Funny reference. I think you're the next episode after Gina Davis is on the show. So I feel like that reference was meant to be. All right. Nice. So let's get into some of your earliest TV experiences, because you made a whole bunch of guest appearances before you booked a series regular role. So of all of those early guest appearances, which one would you say made the biggest impression on you, where you found that particular experience coming in handy the most when you hit that first set as a series regular?
I would say when I worked on Scandal, it was such a beast of a show, and it was just such a moving machine. And I mean, I was like Bambi in the woods. I was so very lost, but you really got an insight into like how the machine works and how much stuff they get in a day, and how many bodies are used, like how many people are used on a project, and it was just. It was insane to be in that environment, because like the thing before the only thing I'd been exposed to before that really is like a small student film, or like you're in a theater production at school. Like it's a whole nother world, and you have to kind of adjust your lens to that world. And that was my first big dose of that, was Scandal, was being on Scandal. And I only had one line. It was so funny.
Do you remember the line? You totally remember the line.
No, I don't. Oh. I think one of the episodes... Well, I do. Okay. I think like one of it was like, they need to see you. And then another one was just me saying the character's name, Abby. I was like, Abby? That was it. So I was in my trailer for hours just practicing like, Abby? Abby? Abby?
I mean this from the bottom of my heart. It's important that you did that, because there's no small roles. If someone doesn't deliver the line, Abby, authentically, it takes a viewer out of the show.
It does. Every job matters. Every job matters as an actor, and every job is a win, honestly. It's you have to remember that. It's so important. And it was a great experience. It was great.
All right, let's move into something that, I don't know, was like a big weird mix of win and loss. It's Timeless. I'm very curious what it was like going through that renewal and cancellation process, because usually it's a pretty cut and dry, like, damn, we got canceled and now I'm sad, or yay, we got renewed and we're moving forward. But that feels like one big weird mixture of both emotions at the same time.
I know, it was so bittersweet. It honestly just felt like you were in a relationship with someone that you really loved, and then you took a break, and then you got back into the relationship, and then you took a break, and then you got back into the relationship. Just like an emotional roller coaster. But honestly, the thing I hold on to the most is just the power of the fans. Like, that was really just the most beautiful thing, because that show had such dedicated, amazing fans, and they brought it back to life twice. And that was just, I mean, it was sad that we couldn't continue that journey, but we enjoyed every second of it. It made us really grateful to, you know, be able to get to tell that story just like a little bit longer, and then just a little bit longer. I mean, it was sad that it got canceled, but I see Malcolm all the time. I see so many people from that show, and we're all still in contact, and it's actually just so beautiful, because so many friendships came out of that, and we had such an amazing time, so.
It's a special thing when a show does well enough to get renewed, but I really do believe it's an extra special thing when your show sparks such a dedicated and intense fan base that they fight for it like that. And that doesn't happen nearly as often as straightforward renewals. So that really is special.
Yeah. It was great.
All right. before we jump into the boys,
okay.
I wanted to squeeze in one Call of Duty question.
Let's do it.
I am curious, how exactly does one, I don't know if pivot's the right word, or like add another opportunity to their lineup of things in addition to television and film acting and get into what it takes to play a character in a game like Call of Duty?
I mean, that audition, I had no idea or I think even like any innate desire at the time to be in a video game. I remember, you know, I was like, I want to be in TV. I want to be in film. I want to be in theater. I was so disconnected from the world of video games that I was really clueless going into that audition. And I thought it was just going to be in a room like this, just a regular room, like with a casting, someone in casting and a camera and me in a room. And I walked into this huge warehouse with like 15 people and a table of full of like fake AR-15s and grenades and all of these weapons and like 8 cameras set up in the space, and it was this huge sprawling space. And I remember thinking at the time, I was like, oh, okay, it's all or nothing. Oh, you have to like, you have to, we're going in. And it has been one of my most favorite projects that I have ever done. And I am so happy that I got to play this amazing character. And I'm speechless. I'm not even forming proper sentences here because it's really unfathomable how much I really just love that project and love every single person working on it and love the world and love the character of Farrah. It was something that definitely like smack bang hit me out of nowhere. And I loved every damn second of it. It's essentially like you're a bunch of theater kids. It's like you're in theater. I feel like I'm on a stage. It has that grandiose energy. Like it has the grandiosity of that. It has that energy, and oh my God, what was your question about it, Perry? I don't even remember. I just love it so much. I'm so excited about it. Any time I got to go into that studio was just magic.
I mean, I think you kind of answered. I don't even remember what my fully formed question was at the beginning. So that must mean your answer was so enthralling that it turned my brain to mush. I do have a good follow-up though.
Right.
So that is a very different way of using your craft to film something like that. So is there anything about that production process that, you know, made you find a new tool in your acting toolkit, so to speak, that you're now able to apply on more traditional film and television work?
Voice is everything. Voice is one of the greatest tools you have at your disposal as an actor. Because it has such power. It can command a room. It can entice a listener. It can really change a scene. So that was the biggest thing I learned. Also, I have like some half-baked knowledge about how to enter a room based on the threat level. So that's great. Because they have consultants coming in. They have, you know, to train you and to show you how to hold a gun, how to enter a room, how, like what your character would do in this particular situation with this threat on coming here, like how you would attack them, how you would shoot from this angle. It's very technical. And it's also very technical in regards to the technology that they use. You know, you're in a mocap suit, you've got all the dots on you and everything, and you've got the helmet on with the camera right in front of your face. So it was also very interesting to act out scenes that seem to be more intimate or more close, like the characters are right here having this conversation, but really they're like, that you're doing like the 6 feet apart rule and you're having this very close, intimate conversation with a person. So, yeah. A new spin on intimacy, voice is everything, and I can kind of go to war. No, I can't. It's I would be useless. I would be absolutely useless because those guys are it's a whole nother set of skills.
I went down the rabbit hole of watching a lot of behind the scenes material on that. And I mean, literally every single element of that production is kind of mind blowing in how far they actually pushed it. I'm very impressed by that.
Yeah. Please note that I said I can go to war very sarcastically in this interview. Please note that I said that because I have nothing but the utmost respect for those people because it's insane. It's out of this world. What they do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Let's jump into The Boys. I wanted to start at the beginning with that one because I am curious, what is the biggest difference between your expectations for the role of Victoria when you first booked it compared to the journey she's gone on thus far?
Oh, I was absolutely in the dark about Victoria Newman. In regards to her superpowers, I booked the job and I thought she was this, you know, progressive Democrat. I thought she was this politician coming in hell-bent on taking down this evil corporation, so driven and so pure. And then I got the script for episode 7 of season 2. And that's when we're in the hearing and she starts popping everyone's heads.
Did you not know anything about her ability or her relationship with Stan Edgar prior to filming those scenes then?
Oh, okay. No, season 3, we got a bit of a heads up because it was, you know, it was the pandemic. So they actually got the scripts to us. They had a lot of time to get those scripts out to us. So I got the bulk of the season before we went and shot it this time round.
So wait, going back to season 2 then, when you're doing those newscast videos, I was revisiting some of it and there's a part where you reference your father. So at the time, like, were you wondering like who is my father? Yeah. Or was that just kind of a line in the bit?
I was like, they'll cover this later, I'm sure. I'm sure my father was like this great man who like worked his job every day and like really is working for the little people. None of that. None of that.
Oh boy.
None of that.
Oh
was
boy,
great.
That's such a fascinating process that you have to go on when you're working with some material like this. Actually, speaking of that source material, did they ever even mention Victor? Like, I know Victor Newman is completely different from the Victoria Newman we see in the show, but did they ever even mention that character to you?
Yes. Well, they said, like, this is what the inspiration of the character is, and we're completely changing it. That was basically it. They were like, this is what the character is in the comic books, and Victoria Newman is the complete opposite of Vic the Beat. So,
okay. I have so many questions about digging into her whole mentality through this journey. But first, I want to know a little bit about working with the ensemble here, because, you know, you're basically stepping onto the set of a hugely popular show where the entire ensemble has established a rhythm for a whole season. So day one, when you hit that set, is there anyone in particular in that cast that you could kind of turn to as a safe haven, I guess, someone who made you feel super comfortable and kind of showed you the way in terms of how everything operated?
Jack Wade. He was, I remember coming in, it was one of my first days, and I was sitting in the makeup trailer and I like, you know, and the actors come in and they say hi and they introduce themselves to you. And I remember Jack came in and he had such a welcoming energy, such a nice energy about him. And he was really wonderful. And he just started cracking jokes. And I remember being like, oh, thank God, my safe area, humor. Because it's such an intense show. But I remember that was a moment that I got put at ease when I first stepped onto the set. He was just cracking jokes, and it was just it just felt like a very lighthearted kind of energy for such an intense show. And then it was a breeze from there, honestly. Every other interaction I had, he was just my first interaction, really. But every other interaction I had from that point on was just absolute bliss. Like, every single person on that show is so much fun to work with, and we all hang out outside of work as much as we do on set. Honestly, I think I see some of the actors outside of set more than I see them on set, because it's such a sprawling show that like some characters never meet, which is so funny. No, it's such a close-knit group. They welcomed me in with open arms, like right off the bat. There's such a genuine cast. There's such a funny bunch of people. It was very daunting to come into that show, because you're right, it's such a huge show, and it's so good, and so you want to be good too, because every single person on that show is incredible. But all of those fears just melted away the second I stepped on that set, because everyone's just so welcoming.
I love hearing that. I feel like feel like the behind the scenes vibe radiating. I'm a big believer that that actually happens. And I think this show is a perfect example of that.
Look, some of us play such assholes on this show, but it's just a testament to how, the caliber of talent, because everyone's just so wonderful. I cannot say a bad thing about anyone. I can't.
All right, before we dig into season 3, I did want to ask you one question about the Congress head-popping set piece. Because, it's a big set piece with lots of blood and it looks really cool and all that stuff. But to me, it also feels like a masterclass in delivering reaction shots. Because your reaction to everything that happens is of the utmost importance. So what was it like for you finding that pitch-perfect blend between her being the person behind all of it, but her also having to convince everyone in that room that she has nothing to do with it and is genuinely terrified?
Well, there are two elements here. Two things happened. So first of all, you just kind of have to not anticipate it. I remember that day I came to set and they placed this gun below me, below the desk, filled with fake blood. And I remember the director saying, he was like, "All right, we have one shot at this, so don't anticipate it." So I just had to not anticipate it, because we had only one shot at having, otherwise I would have had to go to makeup again, redo it. So it's literally just a one and done. So you have to really just tell every part of your being not to react to the thing that it wants to react to. It's almost like someone saying to you, "I'm going to punch you in the face. Just don't flinch. Don't flinch." But it worked out. Thank God it worked out. And then the second thing was, on that day, we actually filmed a few versions of Newman's reactions to the splatter happening in the room. We shot the one that they used, which is, she's shocked and she doesn't know anything's happening. And what's happening? Who is it? Who could it be? And then we did a take where she was far more measured in her reactions and actively looking at the people that she was exploding the heads of. So it really just happened in the edit. I guess they see which way they want it to go, and they get a couple of different colors for the scene and choose the thing that works the best.
Where you ended up is quite good.
It was good. It was good.
Very impressed. Do you like the nickname the Head Popper? Or if you could give her a soup name of your choice, what would you choose?
I can't think of one, because I only think of the Head Popper. No, I think Head Popper is it. I think it's what the people came up with, so it's Head Popper.
I mean, most of the names are pretty on the nose, so I feel like that fits the show quite well.
Yeah.
All right. Digging into season 3 a little, one particular scene that I wanted to touch on was the Tony kill in episode 1, particularly because that is a really intense and emotional beat for both you and the actor playing Tony. But in this case, you're the series regular and he's there on set for, I don't know, maybe a single day or for one scene at least. And he has to be there at an 11 the entire time. So as the series regular, is there anything you strive to do to support someone who is just coming in for that short stretch?
Oh, because I've been on both sides of it. I've been on the guest star coming in or someone coming into the operation, and you're endlessly scared because you just think they all know what they're doing and I'm not a part of it. And you're the new kid at camp it's like your first day of school and everyone knows each other already from the previous year. Honestly, you just make that person feel as welcome as possible. You're just a human being in any circumstance where someone new is coming in. Kyle and I actually, though, no, what am I saying? This isn't specific to Kyle, who played Tony. But in general, you're welcoming. You make sure that person's having a great day. If they have any questions, you help them out. You just make sure you're there, and assisting in any way possible. If they want to run lines, you run lines. If they want, like, I just want to cater to make sure their experience is great and they have a great time on the show. And it's easy with this show because it is a great show and everyone does have a great time. But Kyle and I actually got to know each other for like 6 weeks prior to that scene because we had to do fight choreography.
That makes sense.
So we met up. We would meet, and we had to, like, I mean, like, we're like tussling on the ground and we're like, so you get to know each other fast. You have to, and you have to trust that person because you're doing some intense physical work. And so you have to have that trust in your partner in a scene like that, in a moment like that. So Kyle and I got to know each other very well. And it was actually a breeze. We were itching to shoot that scene because we've been prepping for it for 6 weeks.
It is a very, very powerful scene. Yeah. And one that manages to convey a significant amount of history, even though that was the first time we ever saw him.
Yes.
I love it.
It was good.
All right, let's jump to the press conference in episode 4 when she turns on Stan.
Right.
When you're playing that beat and giving that speech, and I guess also walking up to the podium, in your head, is there any wavering on her part whatsoever at that point? Or does she know when she's going up there and delivering that speech with absolute certainty that her decision is to support Homelander?
Oh, no, she's going through an incredible internal conflict this entire season. So every decision that she makes two pretty big ones that are ultimate betrayals of those closest to her. And she's fully aware of that. And to go against someone like Stan Edgar for any person would be a terrifying moment. And for Newman, you have the added aspect of him being a father figure to her. And the person who's been there for her entire life. So she's definitely on edge. And I played it. I don't know if it came through, but she's hesitating with what she's about to say. Does she say it? Does she not? So there's definitely a moment of, this is my decision. There's definitely a moment of decision there. On that stage.
Oh, the reason I asked that question is because it comes through quite well. You basically exude a very complicated headspace, and my brain can't compute the math of how do you represent so many different struggles and emotions in one particular beat.
It was actually amazing this season because I got to really dive into like the nuance of her vulnerability, or like who she is behind all the behind the masks that she wears in the public eye on a daily basis with every interaction she has. So it was actually so much fun to find out, like, how does she actually act? How does she actually react to a situation? Because she has so many like interactions where she's kind of feigning a reaction to something, or she's putting on it, like, she's just acting. She's an actor. but you know, you get a few really raw moments with Newman where you get to see what woman she actually is.
It's qualities that keep me leaning in and wanting to know more. This next question is more of a theory question for you, but given everything she goes through this season, I am curious to know what you think about this. What is something about the way that Stan raised her, raised Nadia, I guess, that you think that the character is going to want to do for her own daughter, but then to flip that around, what is something that you think she's going to strive to do completely differently than how Stan handled things?
I mean, I think she's going down the route more so of Stan Edgar than her own path right now. Oh gosh, what a question. I think her ultimate motivation and desire and want is to protect her daughter at all costs. And I think initially that protection was from even just like the world of superpowers and superheroes and everything that comes with that. So I think she probably initially did want her daughter to just have like a regular childhood and just grow up and have a regular job and just, you know, and I think Newman is also desperately someone who wants that for herself. she has the house, she has the daughter, she has the, you know, but but this season it goes over into that other world, which is very much, God, Perry, I don't know how to answer this question. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know what Newman will do. I think right now she's actually stuck between a rock and a hard place, and she made a decision out of desperation. So I don't actually think she has a hold of what her daughter's future looks like or what she plans for how to raise her, really, from this point on. I think she had a plan up until this point, but I think everything changes once she injects her daughter with Compound V. I mean, it changed her life entirely. She killed her parents because of it. So, yeah, I think she's giving her daughter some incredible trauma, and she knows that very completely, fully well.
I'll end with one question that probably won't be any easier, but I think you kind of have hinted at this just a little bit. So,
Perry, did you see me struggle through that last question? Yeah,
I did. I know.
Let's do it. Bring it.
I know you probably don't know all that much about what lies ahead, but like digging into how you play moments now could at least,
yeah,
I don't know,
yeah,
give us,
yeah,
something, yeah, to think about in between seasons as we're desperately waiting more. But so at the end of this season, do you think that there's any hope for her? Because she's got a habit of, you know, being pretty ruthless and doing what she needs for her and her daughter to survive. But she is fighting for some good things. It's just that she's going about it in all the wrong ways. And a lot of characters on this show have done that and have realized the error of their ways.
Yeah.
So at this point, just from playing her through seasons 2 and 3, do you feel that that's in there deep down somewhere for her as well?
I think there is. I think there is hope for Newman. I'm imagining us cutting to like season 4 and she's just completely gone dark. Look, I'm imagining there is hope for Newman because throughout this season, you definitely see her struggle with the decisions that she makes. She doesn't make them effortlessly. These are huge sacrifices that will have consequences. And she's fully aware of that. She understands that, no matter how morally gray the decision is that she makes. So she has a good measurement of what is good and what is bad. She's not clueless to that. She's not completely lost. Whether or not she actually goes through with that or, you know, has a redemption of sorts, I'm not sure that we will get that because on a show like The Boys, I mean, every character's introduction and progress is kind of like a baptism of fire. Like every character has a moment where they're essentially going through the gauntlet. And I think Newman's right at the beginning of that. She's making some decisions that will put her in some pretty dark places. I mean, she's made a deal with Homelander. So I don't think we're on the way up. I think we're on the way down.
Been one of the most fascinating character arcs to track in a show that is absolutely filled with curious character development. So that is one heck of an accomplishment there. You're too easy to talk to. We've gone on for too long.
I'm so sorry.
I have to let you know. No, I love this so much. I appreciate your insight and huge congratulations on The Boys, but also everything else you've accomplished and everything else you've got coming up. I know you've got a film you're producing around the corner too,
so much,
and I'm
Paris.
Excited to see what you do behind the lens. So thank you and congratulations.
Cheers. Thank you so much. This was an absolute pleasure. I could have kept talking forever with you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.